is the Day Zero update for June 17th, 2018. I'm Khalid Khojalfa.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Denver Victoria.
And E3 is done and dusted at this point.
Yep.
A lot of stuff to talk about this week, as you would expect. Some interesting announcements, some rather disturbing. On the whole, it was an interesting show, and I'm putting air quotes around interesting because
it's interesting in all the different directions you can take it. Yeah.
Interesting is a word with many connotations, and E3 kind of ran the gamut.
Yeah, so we are going to get to that, but this is a regular show, so we are going to do our regular thing and get started with what we've been playing this week. For me, I'm putting a bow on Shaq Fu, so I'm getting ready to do that. Good game, although it does break one of the fundamental rules of a beat-em-up, whereas, basically, beat-em-ups kind of work on a single plane. You can move up and down, but if you move up, generally attacks from enemies below you don't affect you.
Right.
In this game, there are bosses that track.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's irritating. It's like it's not a deal breaker because it is limited to the bosses. So yeah, it's just something to be aware of, but it didn't really.
It's just another type of bullshit that they invented for such usage.
Yeah, it's actually quite good though. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really surprised at how much this game reminds me of the Battletoads arcade game.
Really?
So, yeah, it really does.
That is a bold statement.
Yeah, it's gameplay wise, it's nearly identical. With a few additions. So, and Shaq, who is completely self-aware of what he's doing.
Yeah.
So,
is there any self-aware since the original?
Yeah.
Is there any sort of reference to how shitty the old game was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some bosses actually call it out.
Were there actually any characters from the original that showed up?
I think pretty much all of them are in there.
Pepsi advertising still there?
No.
No?
No, there's no Pepsi.
There isn't Pepsi all over Chinatown?
No. So that probably was a license that they couldn't afford to get. So.
Do they have color-coded text based on the race of the players, of the characters?
No, it's just regular color.
No yellow text for the Asian guys?
No. No, it's all just black text on the white speech bubble when,
all right,
when there actually is text. So. And there's very little of that. But yeah, it's good. It's got those fun slow motion counterattacks from, actually, I'm not sure how many games did that. Well, yeah, pretty much every single action game in the 90s after The Matrix came out. So you kind of do that. It's a good game. I will be reviewing it very shortly and then, crossing that one off and getting the rest of my titles reviewed that I have in the backlog. So, doing that. Also, Sega Genesis Classics, which is another one. Been playing games here and there on that. Mostly Shining Force, because I started...
It's an easy one to fall down.
Oh, yeah. It's like, do a couple of battles here. As 4 hours later. Oh, god damn it.
Oh, man, just four?
Yeah, well, I've had to pace myself because, it's good. Like, one of the challenges is get to Alterone without losing more than one character. And Alterone is like the second, I think the second or third battle that you have to do. So you've got a few tools at your disposal there. Any Shining Force veteran should not have any trouble doing that. So it's a challenge, but I'll put challenge in air quotes because, if you can't get to the first town to meet up with Henri without dying, you're probably playing the wrong game.
Yeah.
So
maybe this is not an experience for you.
Yeah. I have thoughts on the whole presentation of this collection because, oh god damn, the audio in some of the games, but not others, is just horrific. And Shining Force is one of the worst offenders. Where, it kind of audio just kind of glitches out at random, and yeah, I'm not entirely sure how they managed to screw this up so badly. But I'm going to keep playing it, and hopefully they'll patch it, and it'll actually work properly at some point. So that's kind of been my week. About you?
Oh, well, on all of... As far as the moving process goes, all of my stuff is now at the new place.
Okay.
And so it's just a matter of unpacking and otherwise arranging boxes for the short term so that I can navigate my apartment efficiently, you know, with the space and the things that I have.
Yeah.
And in between such organization, I am taking in the occasional... Street Fighter 30th Anniversary or Horizon Chase Turbo. But that is about the extent of the gaming that I've been able to do for the last several days, just as... I mean, you know, I wanted to have the whole moving process done before E3, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, it is what it is. It
takes longer than you expect it to.
Yes. So, that's been my week.
All right.
Well, as for me, I've basically been playing Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5 Remix, which is basically the big grand collection.
Yeah.
For a handful of reasons. First is that I need something to do during, you know, the summer doldrums. Second of all is because I kind of need to catch back up on the notoriously convoluted Kingdom Hearts lore. And finally, I need to find out who this Aqua chick is and why everybody is so shocked about her face heel turn. And I did find out, by the way, she's in Birth by Sleep, which I'm currently the game I'm focusing on right now. And it's actually quite good. It goes into Kingdom Hearts in a direction I don't want to necessarily call it a deconstruction of Kingdom Hearts, but it comes at it from a different direction. Okay. It's basically about, you know, sort of like, it's kind of like, okay, so you know how, like, the whole thing about Kingdom Hearts is that it has like that binary light and darkness type thing.
Yeah.
It's all very Star Wars, you know. Well, this story is basically about how a person kind of gets sucked into it, into the darkness, basically. And it's just, it's weird. It's fun, but it's weird.
Yeah.
And also the guy that you're playing, because, like, okay, so, like, Birth by Sleep actually has three different routes that you go through, each based on one of the three characters. So Aqua is one of them. There's Terra, who's the guy I'm playing. And then there's Vin, who's the Roxas lookalike. They each have, like, their own story path. And basically you choose which one. So I'm currently doing Terra right now. And Terra is just a little too trusting of people that, were you to look at them in the real world, you'd kind of realize that they're kind of skeevy-looking people.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's great. It's actually pretty good, you know. And just, you know, it's I got plenty to do now. You know, with that and Octopath Traveler, I'll have enough to get me through summer. So. Yeah. That's what I've been doing. So, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so if you noticed during the Hitman 2 announcement, they announced that anybody that pre-orders the game gets access to a new Hitman Sniper Assassination, like, minigame thing. So I went ahead and did that on Amazon. Got the code, and it's actually a really awesome thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar to the mobile game, Hitman Sniper, which I just re-downloaded that on my phone yesterday once I freed up some space. It's like, I wanted to see what that was, and was kind of turned off pretty quickly because it is very guided in the early parts of it, where she's like, here, just there's this one person you need to kill, you know, zoom in, use the swipe controls and all that sort of stuff, and it just does not control well. And it's constantly just pushing you to the next thing and all that. It kind of situates you over this, I guess, kind of a wedding that's taking place. And I've not been to too many weddings, but this one happens in the course of 5 minutes, basically. The bride arrives with her father. They walk across the whole campus and then gets married, and then they go do the ceremony stuff afterwards. It's like, well, that was fast. Now I got to kill all of you. And this mission, it just gives you one episode, I assume, just as a taste for what's going to be in the full game. And there's just a ton of stuff to do. So it gives you three targets that are the main ones you need to take out, as well as any guards you see. You don't have to get them all, because if you fuck up, you alert everybody, and they just start running towards exits. And there's two main ones, really. One goes behind this mansion that this whole place is taken at. And the other one, one of the targets will run out to their limo that took them there and drive off. And it's really has the same kind of sandbox feel that the first season of Hitman had, where if you look at the challenges, you can see, oh, there's this guy that's hiking in the background in the mountain nearby. And you can sort of shoot the fence that is electrified and break it, so you can just keep going and exploring. There's a guy that's up on top of this mountain over a cliff who has, like, a wingsuit. You can just fucking shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
You get penalized because he's just a normal citizen, but you can just do that. There are, like, challenges around killing all the pigeons that are around, killing all the hawks that are flying around, which is hard, but I managed to get it. There's special, like, scenarios you can set up. I shoot this flag and flagpole, and the flag will go flying up, and two of the targets will come to this meeting in the middle of this maze, like hedge maze, and I can shoot a statue to knock them over and kill them. Pretty much scot-free. Like, your gun seems to be silent, so they don't hear you shooting, but if you miss enough times, they will start to suspect that somebody's shooting and look around at you just kind of standing out in the open. It's just really awesome. And this is going to be like a new thing that's in Hitman 2, which I'm looking forward to playing, as they add a few more maps for that. So that is really cool. The only bad thing is there's no trophies for this, but there's like 20 levels of unlocks. Like, I upgraded my clip and my reload speed a little bit. But as I do more of the challenges and such, I'll get more stuff. There's, like, different kinds of bullets I can use. Like, one will go through, like, walls and stuff. I haven't had to use that much, but there's a lot there. And seems like it should be a really cool part of the full game. And one of the things that's coming out of this E3, I kind of built myself a little playlist of stuff I need to play leading up to some of these games that are releasing. So Fallout 76 looks really neat. So I was like, I'm going to go back and put some more time into Fallout 4. And I'm on the PS4 version, and that is, I'm getting back into the groove on that and enjoying it a lot. Still doing my hoarder stuff, where I am going through like some of the special buildings that you can go through and clear them out, and grabbing everything I can. Then halfway through, I realized, oh yeah, I got my Valentine with me. Like, I can just put a bunch of shit on him so he can carry too. It'll be my pack mule, as well as the guy that I just send out to take on combat at first. So I risk myself less, because he can just revive himself eventually, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's been pretty cool to get back into. I am at the point where I'm starting to go do some more work on finding out what happened to the kid. And sort of along with that, Fallout Shelter got announced and released on PS4 and Switch, so I've been playing more of that. still in the early part of it where you're just building up, or basically I am just having everybody fuck and make babies, which is the creepy part of that whole thing. Especially when it's, you just say, okay, everybody in this room, you're going up to the fuck bunker. Figure it out who you like most and do it. Because I need them babies so I can do more stuff. And that's kind of the stage I'm at right now. It's starting to send people out on quests. But yeah, the PS4 version has trophies, has a full platinum trophy list. And it seems like it's easier than the Xbox One version, which has some really hard ones, like getting all of the top-level named characters from the lunch boxes and such. That is not there. There's one for, I think, selling or it's scrapping 500 outfits or weapons. That's not in the PS4 version, which I just recently noticed on the Xbox One version was a thing, and I didn't have much to do with that. I had like 15. It's like, this is going to take a while to gather this many items that I can just scrap without worrying about it. Yeah, so that's pretty nice. Switch is still a little bit further behind because I did not get the like an extra pack of free stuff like on PS4, but that's been pretty good so far. And I also started up The Last of Us conveniently today on Father's Day, which has the best start for such a holiday.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... It's like, oh yeah, Father's Day. I talked to my dad earlier, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a fucked up game. It's not one of those games that's like, oh yeah, everything's great.
No, well, everything almost, pretty much goes to shit almost immediately.
Yeah, and I'm basically at the part at the dock warehouse, whatever it is, where I'm about to try and figure out how I can kill everybody without alerting them. So. I'm looking forward to put some more time into that. And also kind of just figuring out what to buy from some of these sales that we'll be talking about a little bit later. But I was thinking about getting Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle, but ended up realizing I had two $5 coupons on Gamefly to use, and I got it for about 18 bucks, which is on sale on the eShop for 30. And I'll just wait for a sale on the season pass eventually at some point. But other than that, that's been kind of it. I think I just bought Hollow Knight a little bit earlier, so I'm looking forward to playing some of that on the Switch. So how about you, Danrep?
Yeah, I've primarily been playing A Hat in Time. That's been getting my main focus. The game's a platformer released by the Humble Bundle Crew last year, and it's really fun. It's about this girl who is traveling in a spaceship, and then it crashes, and all of the things that power it, which are hourglasses, are sprinkled over the world, and it's your job to find them all. So all in all, it's a collection platformer, and it's pretty fun, but... just like most platformers like this, the camera can be an issue. And with this one, since, you know, last year Mario Odyssey came out, so we're pretty spoiled when it comes to controls. So sometimes it doesn't come out as responsive, and that kind of brings it down. But it's still a really fun game. I also went ahead and tried out the 14-day Xbox Game Pass. And, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on here. And I feel like... it'll probably go the way of Steam, where I'll download a whole bunch of shit and probably not going to get around to it, because that's how games work these days. And, yeah, it's a really cool service, though, as long as you can find a way to focus on the one game. And I've also been scraping up on Detroit Become Human in an attempt to get the platinum, which shouldn't be all that hard. It's just annoying because I have to go through the game again. But
yeah, that might actually get easier for you.
What do you mean?
Next patch will actually let you undo.
Oh shit! That's really good. Okay, cool. It's a good thing I waited.
So,
yeah, that's a very weird bit of news I saw. It's like, oh yeah, this real big moment. You can just undo it.
Yeah.
like, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, take the impact out of our game completely. That's all right. But yeah,
does that come after the game is beaten, or can you do that right away? Do we know?
Actually, that's not mentioned. I think you actually have to do it once. But
okay.
Once you do it, you can go back. So
yeah, that would make more sense. Because otherwise, if they did it right away, it ruins all the impact. But I can see it's advantage to doing it after.
Yeah. That was pretty much it. Free.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's what we've been doing, and now we'll get to what the industry's been doing. First off, we'll start off with Studio Trigger and Arc System Works. They're going to be bringing Kill la Kill to game consoles. So is it me, or is like Arc System Works want to do all of the anime?
Pretty much, yeah. At least the ones that can do fighting.
Yeah.
You know, they're the best studio for it.
Yeah.
Basically, any of the anime that Namco doesn't have, they want to work on.
Yeah.
And even some of that.
This one may not be a fighting game, but it would fit in well with one, hint, hint.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems to be a standalone game, and I think this is going to be more of the action style more than a fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting news.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a suitably over-the-top anime for their style, so...
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
to say the least.
Yeah, seriously, if you haven't watched it yet, you need to. It is... Balls to the wall insanity from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of those good healthy doses of crazy that you need every once in a while.
Yeah.
Is it a la Dragon Ball or One Punch Man with all the fighting, or is it like more narrative based?
Yes.
Both of these things. So yeah, check that out. We don't have a release date, just kind of a general time frame.
2019.
Yeah. So lots of 2019 this year. We'll get to that.
Yeah, I did see this on the show notes, but this is as good a place to throw it in as any. Capcom has assured us that Devil May Cry 5 is not a one-year violation.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to be out by March.
Oh. So, yeah, that's good to know. It means that they've been working on it for a while already. So.
Yeah.
All right. And so another quick bit of news here. Donkey Kong and Skyskipper coming to the Switch's Arcade Archives. Dan Rip notes the Donkey Kong's already out.
Mm-hmm.
This is notable just for Skyskipper and the fact that that game never came out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so I need someone to refresh my memory of what Skyskipper is exactly.
It's kind of a weird game where you play as a little airplane, and you have to. It's kind of like a little bit of a cross between Defender and some other weird type game. It's hard to describe. You kind of just have to play it. It's in MAME, so that much we do know. But yeah, this game never came out. It got tested. They made 12 of them and didn't do well. So. Basically, there's one left.
Does that
one
seem
cabinet.
That seem to be the magic number for Nintendo games that finish production but never go gold?
Yeah, 12. Yeah. So there's one cabinet at the in the Nintendo archives. But more recently, some hobbyists have actually put together a plan to do a restoration, and they did.
Which is why we're seeing it here.
Yeah. So
they did a restoration.
Nintendo basically just completely just basically cut the legs right out from under them, didn't they?
Well, no. I mean, the fact of the matter is that they worked with Nintendo to do that restoration. It's like they actually went up to the Nintendo headquarters over there in Redmond. They got the game out of the archives. They tried to power it on. It didn't work, but he was able to get all of the, he was able to scan all of the artwork, do proper high res scans. So yeah, they basically restored a cabinet completely, got it running. They had to do some significant modifications to Donkey Kong PCB to get that thing working. But yeah, it's not, actually it was a Popeye PCB, but that's same hardware. So now you'll be able to play this on your Nintendo Switch. It's a little piece of history. It's an okay game. It's not great, but
Early Nintendo arcade. So
yeah, the situation surrounding it seems to be the anti Star Fox 2, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong's
I'm looking at the screenshot of the cabinet right now. The side art's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's very much like early Shigeru Miyamoto.
I think art. That is Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yeah, because that looks like his Donkey Kong stuff.
Yeah, that's that is definitely his artwork.
Yeah.
And the Donkey Kong part of this is also really cool because they've ported the game to various recent consoles that they've released, but it's always been like the NES version.
Yeah.
Which has one less stage, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Where's the arcade version? This is like the ultimate version. Why are you guys doing this to us?
Yeah, I'm looking at the cabinet right now. That's definitely Miyamoto's artwork.
Yeah.
So,
like, I can you see that little blue blue Ace of Spades card down there? The eyes on that thing are a dead giveaway.
Yeah. So, yeah, check it out. It's I think they're selling it for $8. So
yeah,
that's $8 well worth spending. So, and now moving on to Sony. But first of all, I need to preface this by saying this shouldn't be news because we actually talked about Chris specifically talked about this problem a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
When his Fortnite account was locked out of the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to log in with the account. Like, they can fix the crossplay stuff later.
Yeah.
But to Epic's thing on the forums being like, just create a new account, like, that's just stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What we found out later was that Sony was flat out blocking any accounts that had been signed into the PS4 from doing anything else apart from PS4 as far as console went. This news came out, and of course, people have been a little bit upset about that, seeing as
Fortnite
just came out on the Switch.
Yes, I'm definitely not surprised.
Yeah.
That they would be upset, you know, with them totally just, you know, basically unceremonially and completely locking you out without really any good reason.
Yeah. And so, of course, Sony has responded to this by saying, we're listening to the community, I don't think they are, because otherwise we'd be able to change our PSN IDs by now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, wait a minute. And people have been saying nobody cares about Fortnite? Like, what community are you listening to that would not want this?
Like, Fortnite is, like, basically eating everybody's lunch right now.
Yeah.
Like, they are the thing right now.
Yeah.
They are what PUBG was at one point and then totally got their lunch eaten. So,
yeah.
I think they announced they have 125 million players.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in a year?
Yeah. So they did mention that you can cross-play between PC, iOS, and PS4. iOS, Android, and PS4, now that version is out. But you can't use your account on the Switch or the Xbox One at all. And they basically just kind of tried to brush that little issue aside. That this is not going well for Sony.
Nope.
It's just another example of they're so big now that they really don't need to care. They'll talk a little bit later about more in depth about why that is later.
Yeah. But Reggie did a pretty good job putting them on blast over it too.
Yep.
Yeah. Nintendo is on board with this. I mean, and Nintendo doesn't even understand how online works, and they're really able to figure this out.
And Reggie was using terms like developer forward and fan forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a tweet from that's a good way to call them out. UK, and it says, hey, at Nintendo UK, you want to play some Fortnite?
Nice. Yeah, because they can play together, but
yep.
Yeah. So yeah, congrats Sony, you're kind of bass ackwardsing the whole thing these days. So another somewhat related news about Fortnite is the Switch version has built in voice chat, so you don't actually need the Switch app to use it.
Yeah, they figured out the thing that Nintendo couldn't.
Yeah.
So it's possible, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it's possible. I'm wondering if this is something that Epic just throws into the engine so people that use Unreal can do it. That would be an interesting way of doing it. But what this also does is kind of bypasses Nintendo accounts entirely. So, I don't know. Nintendo's probably not going to be too thrilled about that. But it's good. Because, yeah, you shouldn't need an external app to do voice chat. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that the Switch online app that currently is, and like, it still just has Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
There's like nothing else you can do with that app.
Yep.
It's I just looked at the settings like, okay, I don't have Splatoon 2, okay.
Yeah.
I can close
don't
you now.
Read this. Yeah. So, yeah, Fortnite on the Switch, apparently, it's actually a pretty good port as far as that goes. Maybe some frame rate issues here and there when you're playing undocked, but for the most part, not too bad.
So, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to get your Fortnite on the go and you actually happen to have connectivity somewhere, well, there you go. Moving on, we got some Steam news. Valve is adding achievement restrictions to help kind of, you know, crack down on those fake games that just spam achievements as soon as you open them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess
that whole non-policing thing sure worked out for them, didn't it?
Oh yeah.
Well, they're letting the games on. They're just going to figure out what to do to them later. So yeah, I guess like the trading cards, they're going to be subject to a confidence metric that sort of evaluates them and prevents certain from features from kicking in until they figure out if it's legit or not. I guess up to that point, you can get 100 achievements. That's how many they can give out.
Okay.
Which, that's more than most legit games give.
Yeah.
Period. And yeah, those achievements won't count towards your total achievement count. Can't be displayed in Steam Profile Achievement Showcase. Nobody really cares about those. In addition, those games won't show up in your library's total game count either. Hmm. And they won't be visible in your game collection showcase.
Yeah.
Which I heard a weird thing recently about how devs that have, like, numbered achievements, people get mad if you don't have, like, a zero. Because people like to use those, like, you know, the little achievement showcase where, like, your most proud achievements.
Mm.
Like, people put, like, little messages there or numbers or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a weird thing, especially when people get mad about it.
Yeah. It just goes to show you, when you design a feature, you're never going to know how people are going to use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially when it's on a platform like Steam where nobody really cares about achievements. It's not pushed in a way like PSN and Xbox Live.
Yeah.
It's like this is part of your profile.
Yeah. Now, some people care about them immensely for some reason.
No, there's just hacking.
Yeah, there's just hacking. So like, I've actually run into games where you start them up and you don't actually have to do anything. You just get achievements like
it's like
appearing.
1 per second.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which is lags behind because it takes more than a second to display the achievement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you just get a stack of them showing up on the lower right of your screen. It's like
they'll start going like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then go through the letters, then go through other alphabets.
Yeah,
and it's like holy shit.
Yeah, it's like, and this is valuable to you in what way? So that's a thing. It's not going to work, but hey, it's a good attempt. Next up, we got skate fans got trolled by Twitch with a Skate 4 bumper.
Yeah, I think
and then Microsoft made it good, so it's fine. But
lol.
Yeah, I think like the final day they had ended their stream like coming up next Skate 4, and then after about a minute or two, the dude's face, the Kappa. Is that what it is? Shows up, and people got furious. because that was one of the big things people were hoping to see.
Yeah, that's not okay.
And especially expecting it. It's like, EA had their thing like 3 days ago, 4 days ago.
Yeah,
they didn't announce it there. Why are you still expecting it?
Yeah.
Then I saw people like, yeah, we can't trust journalists anymore. It's like, I don't remember when Twitch was ever a journalism place.
Mm-hmm.
They're fucking entertainment.
Yeah.
Twitch is where you watch random people play Fortnite
and mm-hmm.
stream Super Turbo, which is what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. And you watch the women see their boobies.
influencers.
A lot of people.
Some people do. So, yeah. So what did Microsoft end up doing at the end of that? So,
well, I mean, they had Session at their conference.
Yeah, so wondering if that was what they were expecting, but no, because that happened afterwards. So, yeah.
No. Yeah. So it wasn't malicious, it was just stupid.
It was, I don't know, it was just some weird thing that somebody at Twitch thought was a good idea, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyways. So we got some Nintendo news. They did not show Yoshi this year.
Nope.
And now we find out it's been delayed till 2019, which, yeah, that's a thing.
That was like, that was like half of the things they announced last year is like, no, it's not coming out. The Yoshi at least had a 2018 date on it. Yep. So that was a bit worse. But yeah, like that Metroid Prime 4 and the full Pokemon Switch game.
Yeah.
None of those are ready anytime soon.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about Nintendo this year is most of their stuff has actually been pushed out quite a bit.
Yeah.
They got Smash for this year. They've got a few other games coming out from third parties, but their big tier stuff like Metroid and stuff, those are nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, it definitely puts that conference last year into a new light. It's like, oh yeah, they were kind of desperate just to get big names out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really expected Metroid to show up at this one, so that was kind of eh for me. The Yoshi one is out of left field, though, because from everything we've seen, that looked like an almost done game. So I wonder what exactly contributed to it being delayed. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it makes you wonder what's going on, especially since, what was it, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 wasn't delayed, and we thought it would for sure. So,
I mean, for the record, it's not something that is necessarily out of character for Nintendo.
Oh, definitely not.
I mean, Nintendo is famous for having, you know, the whole table flip thing. Mm-hmm. For Miyamoto will come in, see a product, it's not up to his scandal, he just says, screw it, do it over. So,
yeah. Honestly, I think Smash had more to do with this than anything else.
Yeah, it's possible.
My best guess is they don't want to stack things too much in the holiday season. Because I know Smash is going to do big numbers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, putting Yoshi, they probably feel that putting Yoshi up there will probably just overshadow it.
Yeah.
So maybe moving it in 2019 is probably a smarter thing to do. I would be surprised if it goes late 2019. It's probably going to be early 2019.
Yeah, it should be early. I mean, for this year, I would have expected Yoshi earlier as well. I don't think that's a winter game.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was ready in time, that would seem like a good August game to have.
Exactly.
Now the only question is from Smash is, you know, what's the final boss going to be? And considering the way the game's been going, is he just going to straight up hang himself after you beat him?
Oof. I thought that was a gif earlier of the arms being erased in Photoshop to show that it was Waluigi.
Oh, I'm already sick of that meme.
Yeah.
No, yeah. It's going to be the same single-player experience as Smash 4 because no matter how much people want to play it down, it is Smash 4. It's just Smash 4 complete.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to play Smash 4 anyway, so.
Meaningful difference between the final bosses in that game and in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, like as the name suggests, it's like this is the ultimate edition of that game.
Yeah.
Plus all the previous characters. Where they do things like make Solid Snake's butt smaller. Like that was a weird whole thing. Like, okay, here's all the characters. That's great. Here's Ridley. Now we're gonna just detail all these minor changes that most of you probably don't care about. Like, hey, here's Marth has two different voices.
Yeah,
they're slightly different. They care, but it's like that should have kicked off Treehouse right after. Yeah. Like, you Smash people, you can stick around and obsess about how the voices are different, how they change this character slightly, this special's a little bit different, that sort of stuff.
As far as Smash goes, I wouldn't call everything minor, though. I mean, some of those were pretty significant changes, namely the directional air dodges, the shield rolling being limited and making you really beatable at that. Like, those are pretty big things. And from what I've seen...
It's an upgrade, but it's still the same game.
Yeah, roughly. And like the game looks to be at least 1.5 times faster. That's almost melee speed. So I don't know. Also visually, it's completely different. The art style is way different. But yeah, I digress. Mm. Going back to Fire Emblem, though, that one looks insane. You have like every unit with like their own army charging in, making it look really warlike. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that looks like they're kind of going for that Total War vibe a little bit with some of the stuff I saw in there. But yeah, that actually does look like a genuinely good game. Yes. I haven't played Fire Emblem because it's been stuck on handheld systems.
Yeah, that's been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, especially that they kept iterating on it in a way that's almost kind of burnt people out.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, oh, here's three parts of the same game. With and then you have Echoes, it's like a remake of one of the original games that we've never gotten, which is cool, but it's also like, yeah, but you just released like three games like a year and a half ago or whatever it was.
Yeah. That being said, I wouldn't mind if they stepped it up with the remakes now that you know, they're actually acknowledging that this series has an audience all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if they could do a good job of converting a two-screen game to a single screen. That would be nice to see, hey, as like a collection.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you can fill some of these gaps in with these collections. Yeah. Some of the best stuff on the DS and 3DS.
Yeah, I think they'll probably figure it out. I mean, now that the Switch, you know, it actually has a user base. So, bringing out games like that makes a lot more sense than it did, on the Wii U. So, yeah.
I was thinking more along the lines of stuff like Mystery of the Emblem, Genealogy of the Holy War, things like that.
Yep.
They'll totally get there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. So that's Nintendo's delay. Kind of a bummer, but well, it is what it is. And another thing that is what it is the way Activision handles Black Ops 4's season pass.
Yeah. So they're. Seem to be the only major shooter out there that's still doing a season pass.
Yeah.
Battlefield jumped off that.
That should have been a fucking clue. Yeah.
Uncharted, Gears, Halo, those all jumped off it a while ago. And they're still doing it over there at Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
So they're calling it the Black Ops Pass, and the way they're handling it, at least as far as we know right now, is not great. So it's going to have the same 12 maps... and four zombies maps that have been in most of the past season passes in the last few games. The big change is how they're going to deliver this stuff. So instead of it being like four separate packs released every couple months, they're going to be doing it more even distribution. So maybe every couple weeks, which is good. Mm. But how you pay for this is where it's all fucked up, because at least as far as we know right now, they're not going to make the season pass purchasable separately from the game. If you want the season pass, you have to buy the
game with
$100 special edition with the bonus pass for $100.
See, that's the funny thing, because it's kind of been a mantra on this show that AAA will eat itself.
Yeah.
And what we've seen from EA, what we've seen from a lot of other major publishers is some rather admirable mitigation factors to try and right the ship before it goes down. Yeah. But then there are these guys.
Yeah.
There are these fuckers who just want to, if it's going to die, we're going to kill the hell out of it.
Yeah. And this is a series that has had problems with the walled garden, essentially, of DLC, where you might get in a party with friends and realize, oh, one of your friends does not have the newest map pack.
Yep.
And you can't just play the map that's coming up, even though like most of the players in it have it.
Yeah.
So Gears did that for a little while, where you could sort of carry along your cheaper friends to play with you. But yeah, they are kind of taking this to a new level where it's now like you cannot buy that season pass or even the individual map packs, as far as they have said. And that's important information to be holding from people.
Yeah,
like maybe they're still trying to.
A bunch of people probably already pre-ordered, and they're thinking, "Well, I'll get the season pass later." And you know,
yeah, yeah, like I got enough to pay for the game right now. I'll get the season pass closer to when it comes out. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they are not doing that, and that's fucked up. When everybody else is doing this the right way.
Yeah, haven't we mentioned that Bobby Kotick is evil?
Yeah, we have several times before.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't have guessed that he was also stupid.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're also doing this and throwing in loot crates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do all of the things people are really against right now. So that's.
So
that's,
are they? Is this going to be like? Are they going to have their big EA moment?
Part of me wonders if they're not deliberately trying to torpedo Call of Duty.
It's possible. I mean.
I don't know. This seems like a game that ran into some issues, so they had to cut the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they tried to delay the game itself, not have a Call of Duty.
Yeah. I just don't get why they would, because I think they like money.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they've tried to get this to be a little bit of a slimmer game, but have more fleshed out options for multiplayer and the zombie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, you know, if you want to maybe extend the life of this game... don't do things like have the season pass that isn't easy to get separately.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it on the PSN store. Yeah, $100. Let's see, pre-order you get. Oh, yeah, that map pack they announced during the Sony show of classic Black Ops maps for Black Ops 3. Mm. Private beta and a theme. And the Digital Deluxe Edition gives you the game. Bunch of Call of Duty points, deluxe bonus items, and the Black Ops Pass.
Yeah.
Which includes a special zombies thing for launch, four new zombie things, and 12 multiplayer maps, and four exclusive characters for the Blackout Battle Royale thing.
Yep. And the Black Ops Pass is not available separately, so...
Nope. And Activision likes to have that stuff available for pre-order.
Yep.
So you have that for the Destiny 2 expansion. There's a season pass for that expansion, which is a very weird thing to say. Here's your DLC. We got DLC for the DLC.
Yo, dog. Heard you like DLC.
Yeah, we got extra stuff beyond that. And this also just goes into the thing that I've noticed a lot with this E3 and the past couple is that people fucking doing this early access thing. Early access launch for people that spend the extra money.
Yeah.
Instead of just rewarding everybody that spends the money, period.
Yeah.
Is really annoying. Assassin's Creed is doing this. You have to buy like the $100 or $120 versions to get early access. I think Hitman, you have to buy the $100 version to get that. And it's like, you know, the early access stuff is cool, but reward everybody that fucking puts money in up front.
Yeah.
Don't just sit here and gatekeep this extra stuff. It's really stupid. That was one of the cool things about MLB The Show 18 is like, no, you just pre-order it. You get to start playing it on Friday beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah, even the standard version.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did. I got that off of Best Buy and like picked it up on Friday, installed it, and started playing it.
All right. So, from Call of Duty to Battlefield, Patrick Soderlunds has a lot to say about people who have a problem with women in Battlefield. Basically, it amounts to, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That backlash continued throughout E3.
Oh, yeah.
People continue to say the historical accuracy stuff, or it's not the historical accuracy, it's the cosmetics. And... he said on the women in Battlefield is something that the development team pushed as far as whose idea it was to start adding women to the whole game. See, Battlefield V is a lot about the unseen, the untold, the unplayed. Kind of perception is that there were no women in World War II. There were a ton of women who fought in World War II and partook in the war. We felt like in today's world, I have a 13-year-old daughter... that when the trailer came out, she saw all the flack. She asked me, Dad, why is this happening? She plays Fortnite and says, I could be a girl in Fortnite. Why are people so upset about this? She looked at me and she couldn't understand it. And I'm like, okay, as a parent, how the hell am I going to respond to this? And I just said, you know what? You're right. This is not okay. These are people who are uneducated. They don't understand that this is a plausible scenario. And listen, this is a game. And today, gaming is gender diverse like it hasn't been before. There are a lot of female people who want to play and male players who want to play as a badass woman. And we don't take any flack. We stand up for the cause because I think those people who don't understand it, well, you have two choices. Either accept it or don't buy the game. I'm fine with either or. It's just not okay.
Yeah.
Good for them.
That's yeah. How you should handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and the Battlefield Reddit just went nuts.
Yeah. Because it's Reddit.
I saw there are people that's like, listen, I'm a history major. I have a degree in history and yada, 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 and found out, oh, no, he doesn't. He's just lying.
Yeah.
Looked at his post-history and was like, no, this guy was trolling for women on Reddit at some point previously.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I lied because I did not want you want to keep pushing the cause of historical accuracy to keep the women out. And it's like, what the fuck is all this shit? And so the Reddit mods for the Battlefield part of it, basically said, you know what? We're not taking the historical accuracy shit anymore.
No.
That's no longer being allowed to be discussed here.
Yeah.
If you do, we're going to start banning you. And yeah. Like, even when Reddit mods are like, we've had fucking enough of this shit.
Yeah.
When Reddit mods can be fucked to do something, then you know.
Yeah.
You know you're stupid. Yeah. This is what it is.
Yeah, and yeah. Here's the other thing about this type of stuff that always gets me, is that they're the only people who give a shit.
Yeah. Everyone's yeah. Like...
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so, hey, it's like, there's a woman in Battlefield. Okay. What's for dinner?
Yeah, basically. It's like, I can play as a woman. All right. That's
cool. I remember, it's like when I don't know if you got, okay, so back when, Anita Sarkeesian was the cause celeb during the Gamergate, the height of Gamergate, and they were supposed to make that movie called The Sarkeesian Effect, which never actually came out. And one of the douchebags who was the filmmaker was going on, like, there's a YouTube vlog of him going on. I was like, this is something that we should be out marching in the streets over. And I'm like, no.
Well, fuck.
Yeah, so, yeah.
They are they vastly overestimate their importance.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're just going to play the game, and it's like some people that just look a little different than the guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
They're just going to be other fodder for you to shoot.
Yeah. It's going to be, not going to play any different, so deal with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so last story before we get to the E3 part of the show. Well, yeah. Anyways,
uh-huh.
So Netflix is kind of getting into the gaming biz, sorta. Telltale is doing a Stranger Things game.
That makes all the sense in the world.
Well, there is a bit of a different part of this. Minecraft Story Mode is coming to Netflix.
Yeah, which would go in the other direction.
Which is creating a weird, simplified version of that, where you can sort of input. The dialogue choices and such with a remote, TV remote, which is a weird thing. I think I've heard that they've done a couple things like that previously. They have a couple like interactive videos on their service before.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of their first diving into like an actual game being adapted for it.
Yeah.
Netflix still like, we don't have any plans to get into gaming. Like, this isn't a game or whatever they're trying to do about this, but as sort of the other side of that, they also announced a partnership with Telltale to have them make a Stranger Things series, which makes all the sense in the world.
Totally.
Yeah.
Those games will actually be on console, so.
Yeah,
the interactive Minecraft story mode thing is actually kind of interesting because it reminds me of, like, you know, interactive TV, which was supposed to be huge in the 90s and never took off.
Yeah.
I think basically Netflix as a platform probably has a good shot of actually making this work. So, yeah.
Because they can do a lot of that work client side.
Yeah.
Not necessarily have to force you to, oh, you have to go get a controller for your Blu-ray player that has app the Netflix app on it, or your smart TV or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you just use the remotes and we'll figure it out on this end.
Yeah. So, cool stuff. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
So let's get into E3, and we'll start off with a whole bunch of E3 sales. Xbox Live, PSN, Switch eShop.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of crap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of hardware stuff, especially on Xbox and PlayStation. I think the consoles generally got about a $50 price drop for the next week or so.
Yeah.
From PlayStation VR, it got a $100 price drop. So the Doom bundle that was $250 is $150 now.
Oh.
I don't know. It's $300. I think it's down to $200.
Hop on that.
The Skyrim one that includes the two moves, camera, Skyrim, basically everything you need for any sort of VR experience. Hmm. That is down to $250. That's a real good price for that.
Yeah.
And sort of along with this, let's see, $450 for Xbox One X, which some retailers had it down to $350, which people thought, oh, they're going to drop the price to $400 at the press conference. And that didn't happen, which that was a common theme at E3. Well, we heard this thing might happen, this weird, crazy thing, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, they also got a bunch of stuff on Xbox Live itself on sale. I like Major Nelson's list here. It says notes for everything. E3 sale.
Just, yeah.
I don't think there's a item listed here that doesn't say E3 sale. So thank you, Major Nelson. If there's a bunch of, let's see, Xbox 360 stuff. I don't think any Xbox stuff. Oh, no, there's Morrowind. Half off for Morrowind. So there's some VC stuff there for the original Xbox if you want that. As well as a bunch of the bigger games and some indie stuff. The thing I did not know they were doing until recently is that if you find somebody streaming one of these games on Mixer and you buy it off of them, you get $5 Microsoft Store credit back if it's at least $10 or more for the game. I did not know how to figure out how this works. Because I looked at somebody streaming Skyrim Special Edition. It's like, I didn't see a purchase option anywhere. So it might have to be somebody turns it on specifically. Okay. So I've been seeing people posting a bunch of Mixer links. And I was like, okay, this is just a weird thing. People trying to min-max these deals. So that's a neat thing. PSN has actually two sales going on. There's Days of Play, which is tied to the sort of the hardware stuff, but also includes a bunch of digital items. That ends tomorrow, on Monday.
If you want that special edition PS4.
That looks pretty nice. I would like the controller itself, but they don't seem to be offering just that. But you can get Far Cry 5 on sale for $45. A bunch of VR stuff is on sale, Farpoint. What else is there? Some decent stuff here. Shadow of the Colossus is $20. If you missed that, that's a really good game to get. Even if you want to jump back into Star Wars Battlefront 2, that's $18. I guess it's real cheap now. The last
With everything 50. They've got planned, that's actually a
pretty good entry price for that.
Yeah.
Especially after they've fixed all the microtransaction stuff. The Last of Us Remastered, if you liked what you saw of The Last of Us 2. It's $10 to get the first game. Check it out. $20 for Uncharted 4. Some good stuff there. The actual E3 sale has a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Trying to get back there. Okay, yeah. Battle Chasers Night Wars, $6. Mm-hmm. PS Plus. You get your Battlefield 1 for $15 with the Season Pass, Premium Pass. Bloodborne Complete Editions on there as well, $12 for that in the DLC. Dark Souls 3, $15. $21 if you want to get all the DLC with it. There's just a lot of good shit here. that people should check out, like Dragon Ball Fighters, $38, $39 for that.
Good deal.
Really. I like the Dragon Ball Fighters Fighters Edition. They just renamed the edition after the game. It's like $61.
You must have probably got the season pass in there.
Yeah. Oh, there's one that's about $10 more than that. Let's see. Fighter Pass Anime Music Pack. I did not know that was a thing.
That is cool. Yeah.
Commentator Voice Pack as well. That stuff all seems to be out, so you can get all the DLC with that, with that extra edition as well.
Yeah.
Fee, the EA Originals game, that's $10, half off. For Honor's $20. GTA 5 is $20 on the PS4. That's the cheapest it's ever been.
Yeah.
So if you want to see what the hell is going on there, it's a good place to get it. Injustice 2 is $24. The Legendary Edition is $42 with all the DLC. Mm-hmm. Just Cause 3 is... the base game Just Cause 3 is $4.49. The XL Edition... Oh, crap. Click my wrong thing. Yeah, $11 with all the DLC. So there's some really good stuff here. The LocoRoco games, the remastered ones, are $7.50 each. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. So if you've been missing out on some of this stuff, you can get it. It's $15 for both Mega Man Legacy collections on PS4.
God damn it.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat XL is $10.
Ooh.
Neo is $18 or $25 for the complete edition with all the DLC. So if you want to get ready for Neo 2, Persona 5 is $30.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
That's as low as it's gotten so far.
Yep.
I think I hit 25 at one point.
Maybe. Let's see. Yeah, South Park with the DLC is $30. Street Fighter 5 Arcade Edition is $24. Tekken 7 is $24. The Deluxe Edition is $34. Elder Scrolls, Skyrim Special Edition is $30. They really priced out that down to $40 already. I figured they would stay at full price for a while. Because people keep buying it. The Witcher 3 is, this is a weird one, it's $20 for the base game. If you want the complete edition, it's $20. Same price. which one do you want to get? You want to get without the DLC?
I think this is an intelligence test that's on CD Projekt Red's part.
Titanfall 2 is $8 for the Ultimate Edition with a bunch of cosmetics. Until Dawn is $5. It's a real good game to get. Some good stuff here. Yakuza 0 is $18.
I am tempted to get that one.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
Yeah, it's highly recommend it.
Yeah, and there's also a sale on the Nintendo eShop. A ton of stuff is on sale, which is unusual for Nintendo eShop sales.
No, they generally don't ever do
good sales. Here's the cool thing. Up until this point, Nintendo had put two of their Switch games on sale ever. Like it's ARMS and 1-2 Switch.
Yeah.
That's it. 15 months, two games. This time around, they have The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. Unfortunately, not the Expansion Pass, whatever that's called. That's unfortunate. The Splatoon 2 is also on sale. I think it's $39, something like that. Breath of the Wild is $45. Fire Emblem Warriors is on sale, $45. Some good stuff there. Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle is $30. You can get the deluxe edition with the season pass for about $40. I ended up just getting the physical version. I'll get season pass later. They got 3DS stuff as well on sale. Metroid Samus Returns for $28. Miitopia's $20. Fire Emblem Echoes is $26. What else? Yoshi's Woolly World, Story of Seasons, Animal Crossing New Leaf. There's some nice stuff here. It's on sale.
Yeah, they generally don't do sales. I mean, they're not, these aren't huge discounts, but they are discounts.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you've been waiting to buy something. I'm looking to convert my physical version of Breath of the Wild to digital now.
Yeah.
So I can trade my physical version in for about, like, $28 at GameStop. I can pick up a eShop card to help pay off for the digital version. Make that maybe about $15, which that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. A lot of digital stuff as well is on sale. Like Night in the Woods is $14. I'm trying to see what else is here. Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King is $11. That is the game that is like Link to the Past.
Yeah, but very with, Link to the Past.
Yeah.
Goro Goa is $10.49. That's a really neat looking puzzle game that I've seen. That plays a lot with like split screen puzzles. As you try to manipulate the images to solve that stuff. Rocket League is on sale and all its DLC. Axiom Verge is 18. Golf Story is $10. If you do not have that yet, it's a good time to buy. Tumbleseed is $10. That one's supposed to be pretty good. Oh yeah, the Little Inferno, Human Resource Machine, and World Goo are all $8. Those are the games from Tomorrow Corporation.
Yeah.
All weird little puzzle games that are really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of neat stuff here, especially stuff that's on sale for the first time.
Yeah.
Also, if you like wasting money, I guess, the Ultra Street Fighter 2 game they put out before the collection.
God damn it.
It's $20.
Still overpriced.
The collection is what, $30? Or $40?
40.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 40.
It's worth every penny.
Yeah, because it actually has the good versions of Street Fighter 2 in it.
Yeah, but you can use the Joy-Cons to do your own Hadoukens.
Yeah, fuck that noise.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. All right, so let's get into E3 itself. So there were games at E3. Imagine that.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah, there was a thing. It wasn't just people being outraged about women and stuff. There were actually some games there.
Yeah.
So, we've each kind of picked out some of the stuff that stood out to us. And I'm kind of going to go through them and kind of explain why we picked what we did and why we're looking forward to them. So, I guess I'll start us off with the first one is Doom Eternal. There really shouldn't be much need for explanation as to why I'm looking forward to Doom Eternal. This is going to be basically a sequel to the 2016 Doom. It's not going to be an expansion as we originally thought. So it's going to be full-on sequel. There are Arachnotrons in this one. The Baron of Hell got an overhaul, so that's good. There are going to be more enemies, more glory kills. They kind of tease that it's going to be Hell on Earth, so Doom 2. They've also made hints that they're going to overhaul the creation, the map editing and stuff like that, because it sucked balls in the last one. So I'm looking forward to actually be able to, you know, make maps that people will actually want to play. Instead of snapping together Legos that really don't end up working too well. So, yeah. So there was that. Then there was Tunic, which was just adorable and awesome looking, and it's like Zelda, and I want to play it right now.
If they had told me at the show that if that game was Supergiant and not one dude out in Nova Scotia, you would have convinced me.
Yeah, it really did look kind of like something Supergiant would put together. It almost has that art style, too. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So, looking forward to that. Maybe we'll see if we can get in touch with the dev. Maybe have him on. Who knows? Might be fun.
Absolutely.
Then, of course, the big one, Cyberpunk 2077. Need I say more about that one? CD Projekt Red's next joint. They're doing first person for, I think, the first time in a long time. So this is going to be a first person perspective RPG. So it should kind of remind you a little bit of Skyrim, but not really. Because it's way more awesome looking than that. There will be hacking, there will be combat, there will be a whole lot of stuff. There was a 1-hour closed door demo that CD Projekt Red did at E3, and there's some reports from that. So, yeah, go try to find that. It's looking great.
Uh-huh.
The only question I have to ask myself now is what platform am I going to get it on? Because it will be coming out on PC, on PS4, on Xbox One, and I'm like tempted to get the Xbox One in the event that I get the upgraded Xbox One console at some point. Because that would move forward. So
yeah, this is going to kill it 4K.
Yeah. So yeah, that's good stuff there. Ubisoft showed Trials Rising.
Not wrong year.
I'm like 3 years behind, but anyway. Trials Rising, it's insane. They've gotten rid of the trick system, which was stupid, so you don't have to really worry about that anymore. Now it's just a matter of getting over those obstacles without killing yourself. But you probably will kill yourself, and that's also fun, because with the physics that they've got in there, ends up with some very hilarious crashes. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to that. That'll definitely be when I get on the PS4 or Xbox One. That's where that's going to go. Then Tetris Effect. Tetsuya Mizoguchi doing a Tetris game, which was apparently in development for 6 years.
Yes, please.
How do you spend 6 years working on a Tetris game?
One is being Tetsuya Mizoguchi.
Apparently. This will be amazing. Even if I don't play this on VR, it's still Tetris.
Yeah, I think there's some very deep-seated stuff in the concept of this that we don't know about yet. So it's definitely one of those stay tuned kind of situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so we're gonna.
There is a lot more going on here than we've been disclosed on, I'm sure.
Well, that trailer was all high concept. It was it wasn't really much in the way of gameplay, if anything. So they were kind of. I think they're implying that there's a lot of stuff here that's going to mess with your head, literally. I'm okay with this, so I want to see this, play this when it comes out, which is not that far away. It's like only a few months out, so getting there. And then Session is the last one I'm going to bring up here, because we wanted Skate 4, we didn't get that, but we did get a look at Session, which may as well be Skate 4.
Yes.
Mechanically, it looked very similar. So I can't wait to see what's that. I mean, that was a Kickstarted game, one of the Kickstarted games that actually got somewhere, so... Yeah, so those are mine. What about you, Pat?
Well, I'm going to start off with the Nintendo conference, because that was, as time passes, it feels more and more like that was the high point of E3, even though all Nintendo really had to do was show up.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to open up with Fire Emblem Three Houses. Fire Emblem comes back to consoles and really, you know... kind of reminds us why it should have been there all along. But just seeing the increases in scale and scope that comes with the all the time that it's been since the series was on the Wii, that's been almost a decade now, so seeing a proper console Fire Emblem after all this time is refreshing, and I'm just hoping that they can capitalize on that momentum and really get the series moving again front and center on the console as a platform, because it deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
Octopath Traveler, same line of thinking. I'm a very serious traditional JRPG guy, and this looks like one that could become an all-time favorite of mine. Mm. And what was that?
Oh, that was my hand hitting the microphone.
Oh, okay. Mm. You do you. Anyway, Octopath Traveler, I'm happy it's coming soon, because it's probably going to be my go-to game throughout the summer. And I think Asano Studio is going to be more and more of a centerpiece of Square Enix as time moves on. And they're off to a fantastic start from what I've seen.
Yeah.
My next pick, jumping away from Nintendo, Session as well, because skateboarding games should always be a presence in the broader gaming landscape, and it's good to see that coming back with Session. And so I'm really excited to see that come along. And, you know, I didn't really get to experience Skate 3 when it was fresh and everyone was playing it, so I kind of came along after the fact. Not this time. So I'm fully expecting that to be one of my big addictions when it lands. Anthem, full marks to EA. EA were really kind of the heroes of this E3 in hindsight. They brought a really positive influence to the show, and in this point, they did what they were setting out to do. They made me want Anthem. And so, I mean, it's really kind of a PSO taken to 11 from what I could see, and that's what I'm all about.
Yep.
But it does.
I just like the way that they're limiting groups to four.
Yeah.
It really lends itself to a more close-knit kind of gameplay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It really does feel like a spiritual successor to the PSO series. And with it being an EA game and not a Sega game, I don't even have kind of the deep-seated issues that, you know, the kind of resentment over the handling of PSO2 bogging down my experience. So I'm really looking forward to this. I can't wait to dive in. And then finally, Jupiter and Mars, which why the fuck wasn't it part of Sony's stage presentation? This game just looks better and better every time we see it. And there's just there's not a whole lot else to say. It has quietly maintained its presence as one of the best looking upcoming PS4 titles and one of the most interesting ideas in a long time.
Yeah.
Conceptually. So, yeah, I can't wait.
Yep.
All right. Well, as for me, the first game obviously was Anthem. That was the one big game that I definitely had my eye on.
Because you must have been relieved.
Definitely. because, you know, I had just been finishing up Mass Effect Andromeda, and, you know, I was kind of down because, you know, the ending that game was bittersweet because it's obvious that they had a lot more planned for it, but, you know, circumstances ended up working against them. So, but after seeing Anthem and seeing, you know, the trailers and the all that stuff and the gameplay, and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's all right. We're good. It's going to be all right. It's not going to be Destiny.
Yeah.
You know, they actually are more focused on storytelling and, you know, just all in all, I'm impressed by what I saw, but it does not at all compare to what we saw from Cyberpunk 2077, which I think is probably the game that blew everyone at E3 out of the park this year. Mostly because, I mean, this is CD Projekt Red. You know, their dedication to quality has been pretty well established by now. And I mean, they've been working on this game at least before. I think they started working on this game around the same time they started working on The Witcher 3. So they've been working on it for a few years now. And, you know, just the sheer amount of just stuff you'll be doing in this game. You know, they've got a very dense overall playing field. You know, there's all these choices, and, you know, they're not holding anything back. And I mean, it's really embracing cyberpunk as a genre really more than any other game you can play right now. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think even Deus Ex will compare when this game comes out. Although people were surprised that we saw most of that game during the daytime instead of night.
Yeah, There probably will be day-night transitions.
Yeah. And stuff in there, I mean, so. It is called Night City, so... Yeah. But, yeah, just graphics-wise, it looked amazing. And I'm starting to be worried if any of my consoles could actually handle it. I mean, they said that they're aiming for current-gen consoles.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, it's probably going to be one of those games where doing the mid-tier upgrade to the PS4 Pro or Xbox One X probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, for some reason, people were bitching about the fact that it's basically all mostly in first person, and I didn't understand why. Because this is the type of game where first person would be perfect.
Yep.
You got complete character creation. You can basically, you know, create them however you want. Honestly, I don't see this game coming out until next year at the earliest, but I freaking want it now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll probably be, you know, late September, October next year before we see it.
Yeah, that's why I'm pissed.
Did you see all the people like, oh, there's no way this is coming out this gen, and CD Projekt are like, no, this is coming out on PS4 and Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. And like, I believe so.
Because of Phil Spencer announcing the next Xbox. And everybody's like, okay, which of these is not actually for the consoles that I have right now?
Yeah.
Or which of these are going to be cross-gens? Like, just shut up, fucking Christ.
Yeah. So other than that, other one would, of course, Octopath Traveler. I mean, that one comes out next month. I already have it pre-ordered, so ready for it.
Yeah.
Good
to see some good games coming out in the summer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was Ghost of Tsushima, which I think is the other game that blew everyone out of the water. This year, man, who knew
Sony's conference was that game did look phenomenal.
Yeah, who knew Sucker Punch had it in them? But I guess after Infamous wrapped up, this is what they've been working on secretly behind the scenes, which is why they kind of went dark for a couple years.
Yeah,
and well, now we know why. Because holy crap, look at it.
Yeah.
And finally, probably the game, one of the other games I was most excited to see because I've basically been waiting over 10 years for it, Kingdom Hearts 3. Yes, the voice acting was cheesy, and yes, I think some of the, I will be honest, especially with the Frozen trailer, some of the sound seemed to be missing.
Hmm.
Anybody else notice that?
Yeah, I think they probably turn that stuff down so you can focus on the voice acting.
Yeah, it's which then makes it like, might need some folks to go back and redo the voice acting. I don't know.
Yeah. I did notice their drum machine seemed to be broken, but
yeah,
that was just me, maybe.
But, yeah, and obviously that big stinger at the end of the trailer is what everyone ended up talking about. Not the fact that, you know, you're actually going to be able in one of the worlds of what was one of Disney's biggest financial successes in many, many years. But, no, it was the fact that this one-off character from Birth by Sleep apparently has turned heel, which is... And apparently may or may not be possessed by Xehanort, I don't know. But it was the eyes, basically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was me. So, Chris?
Yeah, so I would probably easily say my top game of the show was Hitman 2.
Mm.
Seeing that in action, they were showing off the Miami level that is set around a sort of street course that was going on. It just looks like more of what they did with the first season, which was my game of the year in 2016. It seems like more of the same. And even playing the sniper assassination thing makes me really excited for that part of the game as well. It just seems like they're doing everything right with that game. Now it's just a matter of waiting for it. That's always a good thing when you are just like, nope, that's all I need to see. I just need to wait. Also, another game that's really caught my attention was the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit, the sort of prequel to Life is Strange Season 2 that we've been waiting for a couple of years now. But this free sort of prequel episode really seems like a neat idea for promoting a Season 2, as well as giving people a nice way of getting into the series if you somehow ignored the first season. It's supposed to be very replayable, getting different endings, finding all the secrets, all that sort of stuff. And that's kind of like a PT approach to this game without it being PT. And that's really cool. That's out in just over a week or so. I assume it's late next week. Yeah, next Tuesday. Along with that, Donod's other game, Twin Mirror, which they announced shortly before the show, that just looks like them taking all the stuff they learned while making Life is Strange and having a bit of a bigger budget with Namco publishing this. And telling a new, sort of more psychological thriller kind of story that just looks really cool. Tetris Effect is another one. I love Tetris and the way Tetris has been able to get weird over the last couple years is exciting because, you know, Game Boy Tetris is kind of the peak of just pure Tetris and everybody just trying to do, let's remix this a little bit. Hey, we're Nintendo. We'll put a couple Nintendo sprites on this thing. It's all just Tetris. Either you made it good or you just fucked up. And now you put the guy that did Luminous on a new Tetris game, and it's like, okay, we're just going to get fucking weird Tetris here. He's just going to throw all the shit on this, especially in VR. And that's going to be all I need. Maneater is a game that was announced during the PC gaming show, and it is a Jaws RPG. You are the shark. You complete quests, I guess. Eat people, level up, gain new abilities, and you're a fucking shark, just eating people and causing chaos and all that. And that's just ridiculous.
I didn't know this was a game I needed, but
yeah, and this is from Tripwire, the Killing Floor people. And it is just, it looks like a really neat game, and all they need to do is get the Hall & Oates song as the theme, and they'll be all set. Yeah, so I don't know when that's coming out, but I think I heard somebody jokingly call it a shark PG. I'm looking at their Steam page. They got a section called Deep Stats and Role Playing. Role-playing, customize your shark with a variety of stat-driven systems, evolve different parts of your body to improve how they function, and pump up your ferocity to enter brief feeding frenzies. Oh yeah, these are the Depth people. They made that weird shark multiplayer game. It's just scary as fuck. Yeah, so that's going to be neat, because I don't know if there's been any good Jaws games ever.
No,
they're all like historically bad games.
Yeah, they're all like, generally terrible.
And here's one that seems like it's taking a lot of inspiration from that while being good. That's always good. Another one is The Last of Us Part 2. It's a game that I played a good bit of it on the PS3, and as somebody that likes stealth games, it's very much added an uneasiness of terror with the infected, so much so that I think at one point I was about a third through the game and I had spent about 20 hours in it, which that's not a game that's supposed to be that long, because I would fuck up at times and just be replaying scenarios over and over again trying to figure out the best way to get through. But yeah, that game is one that's really good, and this sequel so far looks to be taking that to the next level. And especially much in the way that like Battlefield has and Gears has, having a new female protagonist has caused people to go nuts. Because it's like, well, if Joel's there, why isn't he the guy, the protagonist? Like, because that's not the story. The story is that Ellie's grown up and she's her own person that can obviously just fuck things up for just as well as Joel. She stabbed plenty of necks, tried to cut off people's heads all the time. She's capable of doing her own thing.
And she got pretty messed up, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There is one thing that The Last of Us does really well. It's that it really emphasizes the sheer brutality of what real-life violence looks like.
Yeah, and that trailer did a good job of showing, like, oh, these people are nice and personable now, but to actually survive in this world, they have to do awful things.
There's one particular scene in the original where it was just so gruesome, I actually had to turn it off for a while because I couldn't believe what I witnessed. And the same sort of thing happened in this trailer, so I'm like, if every fucking scene is like this, I don't know how long it'll take for me to beat the game.
I
can't imagine that they would keep that level of intensity up for the entirety of the game. Do psychological damage to people.
Be like the trailer is, being a bit of a trauma sandwich.
No, it's just going to be 90% feminism bullshit. They're just going to feed that in there, pander to the gay people in the world. It's not going to be, you know, the macho fest. You know, she didn't actually kill those people with her knife. She just killed them with feminism.
I really hate the gaming community right now. I hate it so much, and I want to wipe it from the face of the earth. Is that wrong?
No, that's normal. Really.
Those people need to be...
They need to grow up and get out of their parents' basement, which, by the way, is ignorant, is ironic coming from me since I live with my parents, but...
Gaming community's my day job.
They just need to be outed and shown that their way of thinking is not realistic.
Or even mainstream, for that matter.
More socially acceptable?
No. Well, the mainstream thing is the most important because none of this... Because, again, like I said, nobody else gives a shit.
No.
Nobody.
I mean,
even the people making the games care.
Yeah, if these people even beat the original Last of Us, there was no other way to go forward. Ellie has to be the main character.
Let's be honest. By the end of the last game, Joel was already kind of on his last legs to begin with. So, I mean, he spent like 4 months basically bedridden from a really nasty wound. So,
spoilers.
So you add on to that, like, just new Naughty Dog tech of contextualized animations that are still top of the industry.
Yeah.
So much so you got people from other teams having to analyze the animation, like, is this real? Is this just cutscenes? And it's like, no, this is all real. They're just layering on these different systems and animation stuff.
Yeah, like, did you notice, like, how when Ellie has to go and collect her arrows from, you know, places, it doesn't just disappear and then reappear, you know, on her back. There's like a whole animation.
Yeah. Yeah, because you see, like, arrows sticking out of a corpse, and, like, you can just pull those out.
Yeah.
Or you kill somebody, there's drops, and she has to go and pick them up off the ground. It's not just running over the ammo box that's on the ground. It just disappears into your numbers. And that's just something they do really well that not many other people do all that well.
Yeah.
But, and sort of going with that, Just Cause 4 is another game I am really excited about. I'm still apprehensive about the notion of them having an engine that's going to have more destruction than what was in Just Cause 3 and somehow not falling on itself. But the stuff they're adding to this looks pretty cool. It's just, I think contextualization is going to be an important thing. Because, like, what is this island doing that it's just getting hit by tornadoes constantly? Just coming out of nowhere. Is this the global warming just causing havoc here? Just somehow over this course of this week, they've been hit by 400 tornadoes, or this dude just has a tornado gun that just creates tornadoes. I don't know what the hell's going on here. But it seems like it's at least going to be able to provide for a lot of good chaotic moments that series is always good at.
Yeah.
And it's just going to put more pressure on the Crackdown team to really nail what they're going for, because in the amount of time it's taken from the original game to when they say 3 is coming out, many, many other open world games have done the chaos and collectible stuff really well, and even better than the original Crackdown.
Yeah.
They can't just be like, oh, we just made it like the original games. Like, no, we've got that if we need that.
Yeah.
You guys got to be doing more. Which I think when they showed off that thing at the Xbox show, it looked like they have tethers, like Just Cause, as well as vehicles that can sort of jump and do weird shit. I'm forgetting what game I was playing that had that, but they got some neat ideas, but a lot of it is just playing catch up to what other people have done, even since that game was originally announced in 2014. It's like people have done awesome stuff that they're hopefully going to catch up to and make a good game. But I don't know what, I still don't know what Crackdown 3 really is. And that thing's out in February.
Yeah.
These last two are just some cool indie games I have seen. After Party is the newest game from the team that did... Ah, crap, what was I... I was just looking at it. Night School Studio, who did Oxenfree.
Okay.
So this is sort of a new game from them. You are playing two characters who have died. You're Milo and Lola, recently deceased best buds who suddenly find themselves staring down an eternity in hell. There's a loophole. So I guess, much like in Beetlejuice, there is bureaucracy in hell. You are sort of waiting to get your evaluation and see what you're going to be doing in hell. But they've hit the end of the workday, and so you've got a stay, and you'll get evaluated in the morning. So now you got an opportunity to go party, and they found out... there's a loophole. If you can outdrink Satan, he will allow you to go back to your bodies and, be alive again.
Mm.
And so that's just such a ridiculous thing.
Wow.
And so you go do your thing, try to outdrink people, I guess have the party of your life. And that's a really cool thing. I think that's out next year.
Yeah,
I think they said they're hoping to get it out early next year. It's cool to see what the next game is from that studio. And now I really want to go back and play some Oxenfree. I did not play much of that before. But Ooblets is a really cool game that got announced last year. It's basically what if you took Stardew Valley and merged some Pokemon into it. It made it just a super cute farming monster breeding sim. It's being published by Double Fine. They're publishing stuff. And it's coming out later this year. And it just looks really fun. Really, positive game. Super cute. And I think it's going to be... Yeah, it's just PC and Xbox One, so that'll be a game that people that like Stardew Valley want something new. This game looks like it's going to be a really cool thing for that.
All right.
And that's been pretty much it. How about you, Danrib?
Yeah, I just had to impose some rules on myself. A lot of the games you guys mentioned are awesome, but if I already knew about it prior to E3 leaks, then I didn't list it down. Or things like that. Starting off with Tetris Effect, which I'm not going to talk too much about because Chris and Phil already went over it in good detail. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it as much as you guys are. And I'm also looking forward to probably undusting my PSVR because it's been just sitting in the corner for a really, really long time. I'm also looking forward to The Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit, As Chris mentioned, it's taking place in the Life is Strange world. I do have my opinion that I wish Life is Strange 2 wasn't happening, just because of how open-ended the ending to the original game was. Not to mention I hated the original ending, but I did enjoy the prequel Before the Storm, and it made me realize that, you know, while I have my opinions on the original game, it was still a hell of a world to be a part of. It just shows that everybody has their problems and deals with it in a certain way, and there really isn't much you can do to really solve them unless you really know what it is you're doing, and honestly, no one does. So going into the mindset of this little child should be an interesting way to go about the game. Plus, it's free, so there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm also looking forward to The Quiet Man, which was shown very briefly at Square Enix's press conference. It's one of the highlights, I believe. And yeah, this one looks interesting. It's a cinematic action game where you're using a deaf dude, and as a result, he's quiet. So these games that really heighten the senses or takes away one of your senses really interests me. It kind of reminded me of last year's Hellblade's Senua's Sacrifice, where she had some psychosis going on. So The Quiet Man looks like another game up my alley, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they did with it here. From what I've read, it looks like it can be beaten in one sitting, but it can be done differently as well. So that should be really cool. I don't know when that comes out, but that's me there for Square Enix. Ubisoft also impressed me by making me care about The Division 2. I did not care for the original, especially after I tried the beta out. Like, the gameplay just didn't seem like it was really for me. But while the second one does have similar gameplay, like, there's more reason to care there, mainly because they really up the stakes as far as what you're doing in the campaign. And it actually really requires you to play the campaign, because they're really upping the ante as far as the post-game goes. Like, after you beat the game, you have to choose a specialization for what you want to do online. And a lot of my friends already play it and enjoy it, so, you know, as long as they carry me, it shouldn't be that bad of an experience. So we'll see how that goes. And then there's the For Honor DLC. A lot of it takes place in ancient China, I believe. And I was really enveloped in the game when it came out last year. The only reason why I stopped was because of constant disconnects because of the lack of servers. Now that they do have those, that shouldn't be an issue. And I don't know. I was quite solid last year. I had like a 75% winning percentage single battle. So I'm hoping I can regain whatever prowess I had there. Really looking forward to that. On my list, I also have Overcooked 2, which was announced in Nintendo's Direct. And yeah, if you haven't played the original Overcooked, you definitely should. It's probably one of the best couch co-op games in existence right now, and it's just a whole lot of messy fun. I normally like to just troll around with my friends and family, just ignoring whatever's on the menu to cook, and just being yelled at, because it's a whole lot of fun. And now that they're introducing throwing food, it should be an even more crazy experience. A lot of laughter there.
And good ways to troll people.
Yeah. There's also Killer Queen Black. I believe on the podcast last week, not many people knew what it was. And I'll tell you right here, Killer Queen in the arcade is a totally amazing experience. If you haven't seen one, definitely make an event or definitely make an effort to try it out, because it's definitely one of the funnest arcade experiences I've ever had. It's hard to explain. It's one of those games where you want to try it out for your own. And it's really cool because there's three ways to win, and it's 5-on-5 action. So whenever I've seen it at an arcade or at a random convention where they actually have the game in their arcade section, it's always full, and I never get a chance to play it. But if you ever see an empty spot, definitely try it out. The Switch version, and I believe the rest of the digital versions, are going to be 4-on-4 only. So I'm kind of interested to see how that really changes the dynamic of the core gameplay. But it's a whole lot of fun. The versions I've tried didn't really require any quarters, so I wouldn't expect that to be a problem. So yeah, that's definitely one to look out for. especially on the Switch with how portable it is. And then last but not least, I have Super Mario Party on here. Those of you that know me know that I absolutely hate Mario Party because it's a game where you just, like, similar to Overcooked, where, you know, you can physically hurt people because of what dumb bullshit happens. And Super Mario Party looks like it brings that dynamic back. The last few have been really bad, especially Mario Party 10, where they just removed the whole board game dynamic by making you all, by putting you all in the same cart going through the map. Whereas this one, every character has their own dice block. So that should really make things interesting. In the trailer, they also showed that you can use multiple switches to have your own screen, and there are some mini games where you can interact with the touch screen and have some of the maps combined in such a way where you can really be creative as far as where you want to set your screen. So yeah, there's a whole lot of creativity there that's looking like it'll push the features of the Switch to its limits, and that's really what I want to see from Mario Party. I want to see some new stuff, and it looks like this offers enough old and new to really keep people interested. And honestly, this is the game that the Switch should have launched with. Like, fuck 1-2 Switch. That game sucks. So,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to look forward to, and these games were definitely the highlight for me. I do want to mention also Ghost of Tsushima and Kingdom Hearts 3. Ghost of Tsushima mainly because it just looks awesome. The reason why I didn't put it on the list is because I don't know when that comes out. And Kingdom Hearts 3 looks... Yeah. Kingdom Hearts 3, well, we can also debate that we don't know when it comes out. Kingdom Hearts 3 looks like it solves a lot of the problems that I have with the game in general. Like, my main... like, I'm a huge Disney guy, I'm a huge Square guy, so you would think Kingdom Hearts would be up my alley, but it's not, mainly because... I always thought its controls were clunky, and the worlds to explore were not really doing the Disney worlds any justice, and I've always had a problem with that. But Kingdom Hearts 3 looks like it solves that problem, so maybe it'll be good. Who knows?
All right. So we'll wrap up today with our closing thoughts on the show as a whole. First, I kind of want to start us off with the different and sometimes disturbing approaches that the two companies, there were several companies that were involved in this, had to their presentations. I have to call Sony out specifically for... perpetuating this entire fanboyism mentality by starting off in what, you know, Sean Layden said, the church of PlayStation.
Yeah.
That's not a good look, guys. It doesn't make me...
That needs to end.
Yeah. You know, so there was that. That was one thing that kind of irritated me about the Sony show in particular. But more than that, it was just the logistically, it was kind of a clusterfuck. I talked to a couple people who said, "Yeah, we had to move," and it's hard enough getting, you know, several hundred people sitting down once, and then having to get up and do it again was kind of a real pain in the ass for a lot of people. So yeah, they weren't too enthused about that. You know, so there, and Sony, quite frankly, they have a messaging problem.
Yeah.
I don't think they quite understand what they're trying to accomplish anymore, and that's probably because they have nothing to strive for at this point.
Yeah, I always say, kind of segueing into my own thoughts, I've always said that the point that a hardware manufacturer should make going into E3 is to make people feel better about owning your product. Even if you've already sold them your product, make them enthusiastic about that. I had not come out of those press conferences, Microsoft notwithstanding to some degree, feeling any more confident in owning those consoles than I did going in. And when you look at what was on the show floor compared to what was on the press conferences, they half-assed it. And, you know, we either need to just... maybe it's time to give up on E3 as an idea, if this is how it's going to be. Like, they announced the dates for next year, and I'm not even sure it's worth taking the time off my day job to cover it. And either that or somebody has to go old school and just blow these queues off the stage go Sony 2015 or Sony 2000 on them and, you know, start forcing each other's hands again, because at this point it's just this is just a giant game industry circle jerk that, you know, everyone is patting themselves on the back for accomplishing next to nothing.
You know, when you're a platform holder, it's that is your job number one, is to basically make people confident in their decision. So that's, you know, what you've spent a whole lot of time just saying.
Yeah, with Microsoft, I felt like...
they're the only ones that actually did that.
Yeah, they made an effort. I didn't necessarily come out feeling better, but I came out feeling like, well, good, at least, you know, the outcome of the generation may be a foregone conclusion at this point, but at least they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Nintendo, whatever they showed, it, you know, it's not like they showed anything bad or anything like that. Theirs was
off
very
the gas.
Safe. Yeah, they were
their
very safe.
Off the gas, and that's good.
It's,
you're in.
Yeah, it was just capping off a 2018 that I don't think was very good for Nintendo. Because, like, most of the interesting stuff they released this year was stuff from the Wii U. It's like, oh, here's Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. And it's like, okay, I have that on my Wii U. I'm going to go play that, because I did not play as much of it as I would have liked. And it's like,
Sony,
coming up is like Mario Party. It's like, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
Smash Brothers, nope. It's like Fire Emblem, yeah, that's next year.
Hmm.
When, I don't know. Yeah, it's like, I came in, it's like, all right, Nintendo things I'm interested in. Yoshi, Metroid Prime. It's like, oh, swing and a miss.
Not in there.
Cool. And not even like progress reports, because we just got a logo for Metroid Prime.
Yeah, and for Sony, I came away from them feeling like, well, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's my main system because I'm so invested in it already at this point. But, you know, I don't
makes
feel
you look
better.
At the Xbox a little bit differently now.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I should start putting a little bit more time there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but the Xbox stuff, like the first party stuff I liked the most was like Ori and the Cuphead DLC.
Hmm.
It's like, these are like the smallest things you have. Your big stuff's not doing it too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the acquisition's like, okay, this stuff might bear fruit in a few years, probably next gen.
Yeah, I think all of those studio acquisitions were next gen related.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see Xbox One titles from them.
Yeah, because it's... And that's good for them, because they needed to build it up, but that should have happened earlier this gen. They let it get way too bad before they started rectifying it.
Microsoft is in an enviable position of wanting the generation to end sooner than later.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest announcement to come out of their press conference is the fact that they did acquire those studios. And, yeah, those studios don't suck. They're definitely going to make some good stuff, but you're not going to see them realistically until, like, 2, 3, 4 years from now.
Yeah.
And the main thing is that, you know, we have the Xbox One X, which came out late last year, and you have Phil Spencer already mentioning the next console. That doesn't really inspire much confidence to people that actually already invested in it. But they're putting a huge emphasis into Game Pass, and the games that are coming out for it does sort of inspire confidence. So that's where you're seeing the fact that they're trying. But I don't know. It's I wouldn't say it's too little too late, but when the best game you're coming out with is, what, Crackdown 3, which was delayed 4 times, I can't say that inspires much confidence there.
And that was supposed to be like the, oh, hey, here's the power of the cloud. This is why.
Yeah,
it's delayed for 4 years.
Anymore,
and it's like, there's the power of the cloud. It's in the future.
you notice they're not saying that anymore.
Yeah.
No, they're like, we're still coming in February. Oh, God, please, please believe us. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Terry Crews, yell, scream. He's good, right?
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. Just bring up the new consoles. It's like, okay, why are you bringing this up now? You guys releasing this next year? If not, then you just fuck this up. Because now it's like, as you saw, you know, people are like, oh, Cyberpunk, PS5, Xbox 2 game? Is that where we're going? Now everybody's second-guessing every game. Like, The Last of Us Part 2 can't be a PS4 game, can it? It's like, now we got to fucking have this discussion. It's like,
One of the main reasons why people are second guessing when or where these games are coming out is the fact that developers and publishers have stopped announcing release windows entirely. And it's just created a huge negative impact, especially for us, because we were raised on the fact that E3 is there to make you excited for what games are coming out until the next E3. Yep. And now we're seeing games like on E3 like 4 fucking times. Like, I don't know about you guys. Like, yes, I'm interested in Death Stranding, but the fact that we've seen it this many times for this many minutes and still don't know when it is or when it is coming out, it's super frustrating.
With Death Stranding, I feel like this was the year that I can kind of sense that they're no longer trying to dazzle me with brilliance, but instead baffle me with bullshit and hope I don't notice the difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from what it looks like now, it looks like a UPS simulator.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. Norman Reedus traveling the lands, peeling off his toenails.
I'm pretty much done with that game.
Yeah, as far as next gen goes, I think Microsoft did muddy the water a little bit by mentioning it so early, but at the same time, if you actually look at when that system would actually come out, time frame wise, it makes sense.
Yeah,
because it would be 3 years after the Xbox One X, and I think they want to do a rolling 3 year window.
Yeah.
So,
but I would say I think the beginning of this gen was about perfect, where Sony came out, announced it in February before launch. Microsoft came out the May before. Mm-hmm. And we found out when those consoles were coming out, like the year that they came out. Yeah. And that was a nice tight window.
Yeah. But also don't forget that when the PS4 came out, there were like two games that were worth playing on it, and one of them was Resogun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, and you did.
Resogun's still one of the best games on the PS4.
Really is.
And that's not a negative about the library.
No, it's
just that game is damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoutouts to Housemark.
Yeah. So it's basically like, maybe they're not talking release windows because they don't want to end up in that kind of a situation again.
Yeah. If we're not starting from zero with development on like Xbox One and PS4 did,
yeah,
I think that will not be as much of an issue.
Yeah,
it'll just be our game comes out in 2020, and guess what? It's going to be there at launch for the PS5 and Xbox 2.
Yeah, I think the traditional concept of console generations is gone.
Yeah.
You know, at least it should be, because having to start all over again, it really is a dumb idea.
Yeah.
So. And that hurt a couple of Sony's franchises, like, the Gran Turismo 6 was... Yeah. On the PS3, like right after the PS4 launch.
Yep.
It's like, and that stuck out as like a game that, if they switched over to PS4, it was not going to be there for launch.
Yep.
Because that would take a lot more time to get it all pushed up to the PS4.
Yep.
But, you know, that having to have that much of a wall between those two kind of sucks for those games that are coming out right near the end that are really good, but people aren't always paying attention to them. You don't always get games like God of War 2 that came out after the PS3 launch on the PS2 and still did really well.
Yeah.
Sometimes those games kind of hit and are thuds because all the attention is on the next thing.
Yeah.
And if we can avoid that where it's just, oh yeah, no, this is coming out on PS4 and PS5 or Xbox One and Xbox 2, like, then that's cool.
Yeah.
It's just like it is now where it's like, oh yeah, it's coming out on PS4, Switch, Xbox One, PC, go enjoy it on whatever you have.
Yeah.
That'll be a great situation for everybody.
Yep. So, Dan, do you want to take us out?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but E3 has pretty much, how should I put it? Like the E3 we grew up with, like as kids, as industry analysts, like it's gone. It's probably not coming back.
Honestly, with the way technology has evolved to this point, that was inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. Like with the way the internet is and everything leaking and everything coming out as fast as it's coming, like it's pretty much run its course. Brandon mentioned in one of my Facebook posts that E3 is pretty much the Comic-Con of the gaming industry now, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And you know, it just goes to show that you know there's some evolution that's happening. You know, you don't have to like it, but that's exactly what it is. I mean, like, for all of us, we all look at E3 in different ways. Like a lot of us over the past 2 years have thought Sony's press conferences were utter garbage. But then you talk to people in the PlayStation community, and they're really excited about the games coming out. Whereas, like, my rebuttal would be, yeah, but you don't know when they're coming out. Like, I know I'm running a tangent with the whole release window thing, but you know, you look back.
Well, no, the 1 year violation is a real thing, and it you know, needs to be called out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look back at E3 2015, especially Sony's press conference. Everyone thought it was like balls to the wall, totally awesome, but like, you look back at it now, and like, hardly anything there was promised or even came out. Like, that year they had Death Stranding, they had Final Fantasy VII Remake, they had Kingdom Hearts 3. Until now, we still haven't seen anything. And that was at a point where PS4 was number one, but there was a point where, you know, Nintendo or Microsoft could easily have catched up if they came out with whatever they had to come out with. I always talk about the Kingdom Hearts fans, for example. These people knew that a Kingdom Hearts 3 was going to come out as soon as the second one ended. That game came out in 2005. And then they finally get an official announcement 10 years later. They all buy PS4s. And, you know, we don't even know if that's going to come out on PS4. Yeah, we have a release date now, but that was like 3 years after the fact. Like, people who were kids that were playing Kingdom Hearts 2 probably have their own kids now, and mm-hmm. you know, they invested $400 into a console for a game that's gonna come out at its death. It's pretty, I don't know, if you ask me, it's disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of been Square for a while, because Final Fantasy VII Remake is one we saw as expecting kind of to be here in some form. Mm-hmm. It just was not here, even so much I saw story headlines of like, no more on Final Fantasy VII. We're still working on it. It's like, okay. Yeah. That's a real weird thing to have to do. And it's like, yeah, I know you're working on it, but people like to see the progress at some point. Mm-hmm. See what you guys have been working on. I know they sort of stopped development, switched over to another dev internally. But still, like, they're just releasing like one screenshot every once in a while. It's like, it's not a great way to instill confidence in that game.
No.
Yeah, it's not just them either. I mean, mm-hmm. the Xbox One is another example as well. Like, Xbox 360 was the hot shit. You have the Xbox One come out, and it's nowhere near as cool. I bought mine for Scalebound and Crackdown 3. Scalebound's not going to come out. Crackdown 3 was delayed 4 times. So,
The only like good thing is that, you know, the fact that we have Nintendo Directs and PSX kind of makes it like E3 not as necessary anymore, and you know,
yeah, you can announce stuff at any point, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And honestly, I think the fact that these shows and presentations from Nintendo and Sony exist is kind of contributing to the fact that E3 is basically on a downward spiral. Because you know, it's like the Macworld thing all over again. After a while, it's like Apple had this Macworld show, and it's after a while, it's like, well, why are we gonna wait for and announce all of our stuff at this particular show that's we don't even control when we can just, you know, pull out of that and then do our own announcements whenever the hell we want to.
It's a lot of money unnecessarily spent. I mean, you look at the Nintendo Switch; that wasn't even announced at E3.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It was announced on it ahead with a direct. So, yep. You know. So
and maybe it's time to drop the act.
Yeah.
Well, you know, whether or not E3 is for us, and I'm going to put that in quotes because, you know, it's a show. I think it has to exist in the sense that the traditional mainstream press needs a big show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Washington Post had a big article about how Waluigi was getting screwed by Nintendo.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the 2018 thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I think there's got to be that marquee event, you know, whether it's the Oscars or, you know, the Grammys or whatever. I think for the gaming industry, it's E3. And, I know I'm just I'm mixing up genre of show here, but you get my the point.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Honestly, like these days, I look more forward to the Game Awards than I do E3. Just putting it out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, considering, you know, Jeff Keighley is actually doing his damnedest to make those things as legitimate as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and then you watch all those developer diaries in the press conferences, and they mention, oh yeah, we won some game awards, and you know, like, they wouldn't even mention, like, some of the awards from the bigger publications, so that's showing that's becoming something.
Yeah. So. So that was E3. For better or worse, it was a thing that happened this year. You know, for what it's worth, we did see a whole bunch of games that were very interesting. Most of them were not at the press conferences. I should point that out. So, yeah.
We got lots of dates.
Yeah,
a lot of them
most of them
in
are 2019.
Same, in the same months.
Yeah. February 22nd, where your wallet will weep.
And October 20.
I bet that's going to spread out a little bit over time.
Yeah. I think they're stuck. I don't think Anthem moves again.
No.
I think Rockstar should delay Red Dead to February just to fuck with people.
Yeah.
It's like, oh god. Quick, move it to March.
Or they'll just release their Battle Royale mode on February 22nd.
Yeah.
Well, on the plus side, we're in the middle of the year now, so...
Yeah, it's important to also mention that, we are in the middle of the year, and we are actually getting some good games coming out in the summer. So, some good stuff to look forward to, and this holiday will be probably even better. So I think with that, we're going to call it a day. I know Brad has got to get out of here soon. If you haven't subscribed to the show, I would recommend that you do so on iTunes, Google Play. Yeah, that's the thing. Tune in or your favorite podcast aggregator. You can also check us out at smashpad.com, where we have written content, and we'll have more of that going forward in the next few days. So with that, I am Filippo DeNelfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Barkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Rev Victoria.
And we'll see you all next week.